Welcome back to Copper Country Today, heard Sunday mornings at 7 o'clock on 97.7 The Wolf, 8 o'clock on 1400 AM, 99.3 FM, WCCY, and 9 o'clock on KBear 102.3. Our program is brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, proud supporters of the Copper Country Humane Society and the Keweenaw Spay and Neuter Assistance Group. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at QNRReport.com. In the first segment, I spoke with Finlandia University President Philip Johnson on what's going on the campus of Finlandia. And now in this segment, I am speaking with Sam Lockwood from the Keweenaw Renewable Energy Coalition about their latest plan on how to decrease energy costs in the Copper Country. Mr. Lockwood, thank you so much for joining me today.
Thanks for having me, Sam. We're excited after the summit that happened on November 10th over at Finlandia. We'll talk a little turkey today, the week before Thanksgiving. I'll give you some hard numbers on biomass, wind, and solar, which are a part of our suggested integrated plan for the two-county region.
Just before we get into that, there was a, I guess you call it a press release, from UPCO, basically trying to clear their air and tell their side of the story of what would happen with them, what they think about the Presque Isle power plant situation. Just give me a take of the KREC, and what'd you guys think of that?
It's interesting. At the end of the day, whoever is proposing a solution, whether it's transmission solution, new generation, et cetera, you're going to have to work with the existing utilities. And for us, that's UPCO, services about 52,000 customers in the area, and REA, who's a small member-owned co-op, but they only have about 5,000 members. We're going to have to work with them. Our integrated plan, we suggest that we build some new generation and go energy independent up here in the Keweenaw, but we have to use the existing transmission and distribution, so that means that we're going to work with UPCO and REA, mm-hmm. and we're going to work with ATC. So we've got to have a proactive sort of stance towards them, regardless of the situation that we find ourselves in. So in terms of Presque Isle, we got an email back this morning from some information that we sent to both Keith Moyle and Dan Crane, and they said that the current allocation of costs for PIPP's operation and maintenance, that $117 million price tag for the year, the allocation to UPCO's customer base would increase electric rates by about 1.1 cents. And so if we want to talk real numbers, I pulled the last bill from a residence in Calumet. And this particular residence used about 597 kilowatt hours, and the bill was $138.91. That's 23.3 cents per kilowatt hour. So with this allocation to the UPCO customer base, the bill would go up to 24.4 cents, and that would be about a $6.56 monthly bump.
Yeah, increase, yeah.
Now, let's contrast that a little bit. So we're not bearing the burden that some of the other electric co-ops mm-hmm. in the UP mm-hmm. are bearing. Cloverland, for example, which includes Lake Superior State University, they're slated to go up a projected $400,000 a year, and they've already gone online and said that they would pass that cost along to their students and add a $200 fee to their already existing fee structure. And so we are in this together. So
yeah.
I hope we're at a tipping point, Sam, where finally the utilities are going to have to say, we've got to get together. And so to put an exclamation point on this, one of the big accounting firms in the U.S., actually it's a multinational, is Ernst & Young. And they have written an article this year to the utility sector and they're saying to them, you better be proactive because these changes are going to happen. It's not a matter of when, it's a matter of how fast. And so we would like to work with UPCO and REA according to the five-point plan that Ernst & Young is suggesting for a utility. Number one, the utility should position itself to compete.
Mm-hmm.
It should yeah. transform the grid. It should manage the transition themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Focus on the customer, number four. Innovate and accelerate. And so the old centralized big plant model with long transmission lines is not going to work.
No.
So what we're talking about today, we've got a plan, and I'll be honest with you, it may sound arrogant, but it has been easier to put together an integrated plan that we could pay for ourselves that would work. It's been a lot easier than my initial expectations. And so if a small group of folks in the coalition can get together and put together a solution that works better for our people at a much lower cost than, I say, a utility with the resources that they have. Anything they spend on infrastructure gets reimbursed, and then they put their 10% profit on top of that. These utilities have deep pockets, and they can be part of the solution, and that's what we're hoping for.
Recently, lawmakers have stepped up, and you have Representative Dianda, Senator Casperson, even Senators Stabenow, Gary Peters, just everybody's getting involved. How important is that to have them on your guys' side?
This is great, and what we saw over the last couple of days is that the bill was co-sponsored by three of those folks. So Senator Stabenow, Dan Benishek, and Gary Peters, Senator-elect Peters. And they look like they're going to be successful in buying us some time on the mandate for the $117 million bump. And so I start to feel like there's critical mass growing. You had the governor's office put a motion in, so that was Governor Snyder and Bill Schuette, the attorney general, put a motion in to stop the pending acquisition of by We Energies of ATC. They would have a 60% ownership in the only transmission company up here.
Mm-hmm.
So of the 9,940 miles of transmission lines up here, ATC is responsible for all of that. And then We Energies, who supplies power to UP customers from the Green Bay area, coal-fired power, nuclear power, that's a very monopolistic situation. And so to their credit, we've got the governor's office and the attorney general working together. And so we're starting to see some of those things that may be able to stop the madness a little bit and put other solutions on the table. We want to keep that momentum. We want to go beyond transmission solutions and beyond some of the other things we're talking about and go to a energy independence model for the UP, and we can do it.
Let's get into the plan, starting with biomass. And it seems like this one, I don't want to say is the most important, but it's in comparison to the area where you have just so much woods, so much trees out there, why not put it to use? And it looks like the KREC has a plan. And if I remember from the summit, some of these ideas were brought over from Finland.
I think Finland leads the world in most categories of biomass electric generation or district heating. And so in front of me, I've got a map from Asko Ojaniemi's talk. He was the lead presenter at the summit. And there are 400 medium and large-scale biopower and heating plants in Finland. And so you look at Finland as a country, it's essentially the same size as Michigan, and they have about half the residents, 5.5 million. But the dots on the map are impressive. And so they're pretty good at doing what they do. The question I always get about biomass is it a polluting situation?
Exactly.
Well, when you look at the quality of life index
in Finlandia, always top of the list.
Top of the list. I mean, quality of life, you always have Denmark, Sweden, Finland, and Norway in there. I mean, they just lead in so many categories. But the technology is so good with biomass over there. They started doing this in the 60s, and Osco told me their forest stock there, if you call it 1X back in the 60s, it's now 2X. And that's with them sustainably managing their forestry and pulling all the fuel they need for these 400 medium and large-scale plants. And because they manage the resource so well, it's twice as big as it used to be, but they fuel most of their country, electric and heat, with biomass. So, as you said, why not go to the experts? And what you'll hear from me today is saying, we don't have time. We've got an emergency, and so let's use the experts. Let them design, build, finance, operate, and maintain until we get up to speed.
I mean, who better to go to?
For biomass, who better to go to? And that's who we're working with. And so today I'm going to share with you numbers because in our intense discussions with Osco and after the summit, he ended up staying with my wife and I and our two dogs out in Cedar Bay. And that was the beginning of the snowfall.
Mm-hmm.
And so he did get out, but we spent a lot of time indoors really looking at this. And so the upshot of having him stay for two or three extra days was that we've already downsized what we proposed at the summit, an 18-megawatt biomass facility for Houghton and Keweenaw counties. That's down. We can do it now for 10 megawatts.
Oh, okay. So, and okay, so the biomass. Am I right to say that it is the most important part of the entire plan?
It is the most important part for a practical reason. If you don't have baseload power, if you don't have that dispatchable, callable power that's reliable 24/7 that can be dialed in within a couple of hours to, if you, in the case of a blackout, if you don't have that, then we're not going to get wind or solar, the intermittent sources, we're not going to get them in.
Okay.
And so that's first. And I'll talk a little bit more about hydro because later on, but right now we're proposing biomass because we have so much fuel. And so if we want to look at numbers for what I think we might split it into 2 5-megawatt modular prefab.
Give us the best case scenario where we're cutting costs, we're saving money, and you know, people could want to get involved.
So that scenario, we're talking to two major developers. So the first one is working with Osco Oyeniemi, whose firm is basically a consulting firm. And so for a price, they come in and they kind of do project management for you. The manufacturer is also a finished company for these modular units. So they come basically in a canister here, and then they get put together. And since they're prefab, they go up pretty quickly. 2 5-megawatt units, biomass units, of which there are 8 working examples right now in Germany. These plants are modular in design and well-proven, so there's a lot of operating hours on those. The estimate for total project cost for a 5-megawatt biopower unit is 25 million euros, and so it's $1.25 at the exchange right now, so you're at $31.5 million, gets you 5 megawatts. Multiply that by 2 if we split them. If we put one up in Keweenaw County so that we're close to the fuel in the county.
And one in Houghton County.
One in Houghton County. Now, that's one way to go. Let's say, for example, that Keweenaw County is not interested in participating. We already have a lot of interest in Houghton County for a couple of reasons we'll talk about, and it's fuel sourcing. But an 11-megawatt modular unit is 35 to 40 million euros. So, so a single unit in Houghton County could power both counties, and we're looking at $50 million for that. There's your base load power for all 38 residents and businesses. So those numbers are very doable when you start to think about that's 5 months of paying for Presque Isle to stay open with no power.
It's when you look at the relative numbers, it almost seems like, why aren't we doing this already?
I'm glad you said that, because we can do it.
Mm-hmm.
And what we're talking about today is that we have all the resources we need to go energy independent, use the existing grid, make our arrangements with UPCO and REA and ATC, but we'll make our own power. And so we can quit talking about Wisconsin. We can quit talking about Canada for natural gas. We can quit talking about running new lines across the Mackinac Straits to tie us up the Two Peninsula model. We don't need to do any of that, because those models are all still reliant on generation that's a long way away. And so 3 years ago when the lights went off up here and Todd Van Dyke was the only guy on the air because he had a generator. We don't have to do that anymore. And a distributed system like we're suggesting is so much more reliable, because what is the likelihood of 33 separate generating capacities dispersed throughout the two-county area all going down at once?
Very slim.
Very slim. So,
tell me a little bit about the interest in Houghton County.
Houghton County... Finland, what they do is they try and put their generating assets close to the fuel. That just makes sense, right?
Yeah.
So we happen to have, and up in the Atlantic Mine area, we happen to have a outfit name of Northern Hardwoods, who is a great source of sawdust. And
excellent source.
Excellent source. They've already expressed interest in perhaps hosting this. And when we proposed in the plan originally, one of the sites for the biomass plant was in and around Atlantic Mine. There were 4 communities there that grew up around the mining that happened there. So that was Painesdale, Tri-Mountain, South Range, Atlantic Mine, and Baltic, I believe. So that was 5 communities. But that's brownfield. So most of the abandoned mine sites have some sort of contamination problems, and the EPA wants us to source all these renewable assets on land that's already been tainted in some way. And so we were already thinking that way. The substation is there. It's the last one before you come across the bridge and you hit the substation in Hancock. And so there's a lot of reasons there. Well, within spitting distance of those sites that we looked at is Northern Hardwoods. And so they're a good source of fuel. They have an interest in perhaps hosting a biomass facility, and all of a sudden, the logistical supply chain for a lot of these things collapses if we could pull off a deal like that. And so that's pretty exciting. And we're going to continue those conversations with those folks to see if we can do it.
You're listening to Copper Country Today, here with my guest, Sam Lockwood from the KREC. Jumping to solar, have you been getting, when people were talking about solar energy, just the fact that, I mean, roughly 5 to 6 months of sunlight, and even with the wind, even when you get wind power involved, when there's no sunlight, when there's no wind, has that become an issue when you guys were creating your plan?
Not really. As you go into it, it's understood that we're going to have a baseload plant that's capable of supplying power to the whole population base 24/7. And that's the idea of using biomass or something similar for baseload power. Now, the intermittent sources, the renewable sources like wind and solar, are going to have particular characteristics, seasonal characteristics, daily variations that you can build right into the model. So let's talk turkey on that.
Mm-hmm.
In the plan, we proposed about 22 megawatts total of solar, and that was distributed. 5 megawatts in Lake Linden, 3 megawatts in Mohawk, and 14 megawatts in and around Atlantic Mine, as we talked about for biomass, because of the large amount of acreage available there that's brownfield quality. So you move the solar to different locations, and certainly on a day it's sunny in Chassel, mm-hmm, and cloudy in Keweenaw, that makes some good sense. Now, we have the benefit of looking at this together, Sam, but there are databases that tell you what the solar flux is at a particular site. So you punch in detailed latitude and longitude coordinates. We are working, we're going to end up working with two or three different companies who can bid out the build out of the solar. The first one to come in is Pacific Power Renewables, and we are proposing that Lake Linden does in fact host some of the solar that we're proposing for the entire area.
Mm-hmm.
And they have gotten us quotes for all the pieces of the 22 megawatts. We'll talk just about Lake Linden because that's the simple one. We want to put a 5-megawatt array down there on the sands. The village of Lake Linden owns a 200-acre brownfield site. It's mostly stamp sand from the old smelting operations that were on Torch Lake. And so as you and I look at what does our solar flux look like, well, we know that we don't get a whole lot of sun in those winter months. But April, May, June, July, September, we are better than Hawaii. So it's a little counterintuitive. So if you're on the equator and your days are 12 hours and your nights are 12 hours,
mm-hmm,
by definition, half the time the sun isn't shining. So your array is not going to put out half the time, even if you're on the equator. But because the earth tilts and we have our seasons, in the summertime up here we have very long days, and the high latitude also decreases the amount of atmosphere that the sun comes through, and that produces these sweet months, 5 months of the year where we're
Getting a lot of sun,
better than Hawaii. And so, mm-hmm, you know that going in. And we have designed our array to have a tracking axis that gives us 30% more power.
Mm-hmm.
But we know that solar is going to do a heck of a job for us when the air conditioners are on and things like that in the summer. But you couldn't rely on that as a single entity to make things work. And so we're going to put 5 megawatts of solar in Lake Linden, 3 in Mohawk, and the balance hopefully in southern Houghton County. That's going to work. Wind, the good news is that it tends to blow up here a little bit harder in the evenings, and it blows pretty darn hard in all those winter months. And so for renewables, zero fuel things, they pair together pretty good. Remembering at the end of the day, we're going to put those assets together in a meaningful way, and knowing full well that if they're both down, if you got no wind and no sun at a particular time,
mm-hmm,
that's the time you dial up the rheostat on your biomass to cover everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And so that integrated plan works pretty good.
From the three that you have been able to deal with, biomass, solar, wind, and putting all these together, Some people would look at the plan and say, "Oh man, we're so far away until we get to that point." Starting from today, and with the extensions that lawmakers have been able to give us, how close are we to making all this a reality, based from the KREC's research?
I think if you could set aside the studies that are going to be required for interconnection to the grid, mm-hmm. knowing full well that connecting wind and solar to the grid is fairly straightforward compared to bringing a new natural gas plant online. The solar can be built out, the arrays can be built out in 3 to 6 months. So if you could convince UPCO and REA to fast track, for example, getting these solar arrays in place, get through all the interconnection studies that have to be done, the other interconnection things that have to be done, maybe upgrades to existing transmission distribution infrastructure. 3 to 6 months, that's pretty good. We started to look at the prefab biomass units because our absolute requirement for biomass power is small. Mm-hmm. These units come prefab, and so they go up in a hurry. So starting from scratch with more of a stick-built plan on biomass, we put 18 months, to be generous, to get it done. But with the prefab units, that can be done quicker. Again, with the caveat that you do have interconnection studies, you might have...
You do your due diligence.
Exactly. But we're not talking about the transmission solutions that are on the table, which are 3 or 4 years to build those out at a cost of $1 billion or more. So the timelines work, the absolute dollars work, and at the end of the day, two of the three generation assets are zero fuel, zero emission, wind and solar. Mm-hmm. And then on biomass, I want to answer one question if we could circle back to that. It is a fuel-based thing. You've got to get quality fuel to the site, and there have been questions about Launce Warden, et cetera. There was a study that was commissioned by some folks interested in converting part of Presque Isle to a biomass plant. I believe it was just boiler number 4. But Joe Kramer at the Energy Center of Wisconsin in 2008 took a look at what our assets look like for fuel, mm-hmm. and they included Keweenaw and Houghton County. So isn't that great? And so let me share with you a little bit of what they concluded. Harvest residues appear to be the most promising source of wood fuel for Presque Isle, but that would also be true here. Mm-hmm. They are abundant, low-valued, and have suitable fuel characteristics. The ultimate supply of wood for harvest does not appear to be a limiting factor, so there's plenty on the ground. A formal market for biomass of this type, likely to be used as boiler fuel, does currently not exist. Okay, so that now we're talking about fuel supply chain. Luckily for us, Osco Oyenemi and Bennett, is one of the things they do is train a local workforce to get the fuel, the harvest residues, out of the forest, mm-hmm. onto trucks, chipped and stored at the facility. That's what one of the things they're going to offer us. And so we already have a quote from them on that. And let's look specifically at what the resources look like for Houghton and Keweenaw counties. Keweenaw County has 198,123 acres of forest land. Every year, the cubic feet of growing stock is about 352 million and change. Our annual removals are tiny, 14 million cubic feet. And so our net annual growth is 10 million. So we have healthy forests. And we're not talking about taking whole trees anyway. We're talking about taking slash and harvest residues. Mm-hmm. Houghton, for comparison, has 511,000 acres of forest land, 923 million in change growing stock. We take only about 20 million a year out. And so our net growth every year is over 22 million. And so we have the fuel that we need. And that's a beautiful thing. So it seems like the plan is going to work.
All righty. Well, that'll wrap up this segment of Copper Country Today. Sam Lockwood, thank you so much for joining me on today's program.
Thanks for having me, Sam.
Our program is brought to you in part by the members of the Copper Country Education Association and by the Copper Country Veterinary Clinic, proud supporters of the Copper Country Humane Society and the Keweenaw Spay and Neuter Assistance Group. You can also listen to a podcast of our program by going to the Copper Country Today page at keweenawreport.com. Join us again next week for another edition of Copper Country Today.